The attorney, John Hendrickson, says all have the right to observe their religious beliefs and added that employers can't, quote, pick and choose. A telephone call to Star Transport on Wednesday by the AP for comment was not immediately returned. A Mattoon man was sentenced to 3 years in prison after authorities said that he dined and dashed on a $70 bill. Anthony Malabahar pleaded guilty to felony theft charges after authorities say he didn't pay at the Alamo Steakhouse in Mattoon. He was charged with a felony because of his criminal record, including other theft convictions. Well, that's your Illinois Public Media News for this hour. To find more, visit us online at will.illinois.edu. I'm Chris Berube.
WILL programs are made possible by Hendrick House at Green and Lincoln, three blocks from the Engineering Quad. Hendrick House rooms are large, carpeted, and air-conditioned with semi-private baths. Meals are served in its gold LEED-certified dining area. More information is available at hendrickhouse.com.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. Let's take a look at your Champaign-Urbana weather. Today, it's expected to be mostly sunny for the rest of the afternoon and cool, well, cooler, I guess, with a high of 77, cooler than the high of 92 we saw yesterday. North winds will continue to be fairly strong, 15 to 20 miles per hour, with gusts getting up to 25 miles. Tonight, mostly clear and cool with a low of 55. Friday, mostly sunny with a high of 79. By Friday night, it's going to be partly cloudy again. And if we thought we were out of the woods in terms of the rain, well, Saturday and Sunday are a bit of a rude awakening. Saturday, 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms with a high of 82. Saturday night, 70% chance of rain. Sunday, showers and thunderstorms are likely with a high of 81. Let's take a look at some temperatures around the state this hour. In Chicago at O'Hare Airport, it's 73 and mostly sunny at the moment. In Kankakee, mostly sunny and 73 as well. In Macomb, sunny and 81 right now. In Pontiac, sunny and 79. Decatur and Peoria are both seeing sun and degrees of temperatures of 79 and 78 degrees. Springfield, it's 80 at the moment. In Champaign at Willard Airport, it's sunny and 78. And it's overcast here at Friends Plaza in Urbana, or at least partly cloudy, and 80 degrees. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL.
Support for WILL comes from Urbana's Market at the Square, happening every Saturday morning, rain or shine, from 7 a.m. to noon at the corner of Illinois and Vine Streets in historic downtown Urbana. Learn more at urbanaillinois.us/market.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. Transitioning from military life to college can be difficult, especially when it comes to transferring credits. Jenna Dooley reports on efforts to streamline the process for some in Illinois.
Rich Bennett spent a year in Afghanistan with the U.S. Army. As part of his training, he was taught the country's main language, Pashto.
And when I took the class, they said, this will fill your Bachelor of Arts requirement for your language. And I was like, oh, this is great.
The course involved 420 hours of instruction. He received a certificate of completion from the Defense Language Institute for the training at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. When he left the Army, he enrolled at Northern Illinois University to finish his communications degree. Bennett says he was told Pashto would not count toward his language requirement.
You know, a university sees that and they're like, that's not anything anyone's ever heard of. It's not a language we offer. So that was my first hurdle.
So he signed up for Spanish, but the class was canceled. He considered area community colleges, but those didn't work out either. With the help of counselors, he found a language that could be taken for just two semesters in order to fulfill the requirement.
I don't even know how to pronounce it. It's K-H-M-E-R. I'm just taking it to graduate so that I can get out and start working. I'm 32. If I don't start working, my wife's going to kill me. So,
unfortunately, it's not as simple as the student veterans themselves being able to say, this should count for that.
Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs Director Erica Borgren is familiar with stories like this.
Where we've encountered some, I wouldn't even call it resistance, I would say a lack of an understanding in terms of how to do it is at the transfer specialist level on the campuses themselves.
The American Council on Education, or ACE, uses faculty to review military courses offered at bases. They issue guidelines that colleges can use to consider credit. Kathy Sandine is with the American Council on Education.
When you think about all the things that service members need to do and know to be successful in their jobs, and in many cases their jobs are life and death type jobs, it's a broad array of information and knowledge that they need to have. And so our faculty are able to go in there and make those connections.
But it's difficult to review every course offered in the military. ACE only reviews courses requested by the Department of Defense, not by individuals or universities. In Bennett's case, he says he was told by ACE his course wasn't among those reviewed, so there wasn't a recommendation for NIU to take into consideration.
I'm not saying they're doing a bad job. I'm just saying there's too much in the Army that we can learn that they can't keep up with.
Colleges often use a combination of factors to determine if military experience is worth college credit. At NIU, admissions director Kimberly Buster Williams says counselors start with military transcripts and cross-check that with other students. She adds the process is easier when a veteran is studying in a field similar to their military experience.
It is case by case, but we do maintain a database. And so as credits are reviewed, that is available in the database so that future students don't have to start that process all over again. And so it builds on itself.
Bennett was able to get physical education credit without hassle. Connecting all of the dots is something Veterans Affairs Director Erica Borgren says is a work in progress.
One of the ways that we've worked to overcome that is by bringing in the folks who do those federal recommendations from the American Council on Education and having them do in-depth workshops with transfer specialists from across the state, saying here's how we arrived at it, here's the Illinois educator who was actually part of this process, and let him tell you about his experience when he went to the base.
NIU student Rich Bennett says that's not likely to help him, but he would like future students to avoid the red tape he went through.
If I went to University of Illinois and I took a class on English 101 and I went to NIU with that transcript, they would say, yes, U of I, I've heard of that. This is a transcript that was easy for you to procure. That's how it should be. You know, I think everybody should look at a military training and say this is equivalent. I mean, if you can fight a war with this information, you can definitely go to a university with that information.
I'm Jenna Dooley.
You're listening to WILL. Law enforcement officials are pressing cell phone companies to make their devices more theft-resistant. Mobile phones, especially iPhones, have become very common targets for robbers. NPR's Steve Henn reports on efforts to make them almost unstealable.
Almost everyone has a story about losing their phone.
Yep, my name is Robert McNamara.
But Robert McNamara's story is one of my favorites.
I live about 100 miles north of London. Which is just outside Birmingham.
He's a cabbie, and McNamara's seen plenty of people leave phones in the back of his car. But when his phone was stolen, it wasn't the only thing that went missing.
Right, well, what happened was, I was working on the Friday night, and I jumped out the car to run into a local shop to buy a drink. When I come back out the shop, the car had gone. My taxi had been stolen.
He had left his keys in the ignition and his phone on the front seat. But afterward, McNamara ran home to a computer and activated an app on his phone that let him track it.
And then the police were able to track the signal as well. Actually found my car within an hour of the car being stolen.
And that's the thing about stolen phones. It seems like with all the technology that's built into them, they should be easy to find. You'd think stealing a phone would be a very difficult crime to get away with, but it's not.
There's a huge industry in stolen smartphones.
Eric Schneiderman is New York's attorney general.
We now have, in a lot of cities, essentially open-air markets for smartphones. We have sophisticated operations where they export them to other countries.
And a recent study found that lost and stolen phones cost consumers close to $30 billion a year. 10% of smartphone owners say they've had a phone stolen. Even tech reporters are not immune.
You know, I was having lunch with somebody.
That's my colleague, Laura Seidel.
I walked out of the restaurant, and like all people these days, or not everybody, but like all rude people, I keep my phone out, and I must have left it on the table.
By the time Laura went back, someone had grabbed her phone, and Laura spent the next 3 hours skulking around San Francisco using an app and an iPad to track her phone thief.
So this friend came with me, and we went to this bar, which seemed right where my phone was. But of course, what are you going to do? Walk around the bar saying, did you steal my phone? You know?
Now, Laura could have set off an alarm on her phone and made it scream, but that seemed dodgy. And most cops recommend that you do not do this. Tracking down and confronting your cell phone thief isn't safe or really very smart. But it's tempting, and the technology that makes it possible also makes phone thefts even more aggravating. So today, law enforcement officials like Schneiderman are asking tech companies for a different kind of fix. They want a kill switch that could
make every one of these phones something that can be incapacitated essentially turned into nothing more than a paperweight.
Schneiderman says if you can cancel a credit card, you should be able to cancel a phone, transform it into a brick, and take away the incentive for thieves. But some in the technology community say simply adding a kill switch to smartphones could create more problems.
If there's a mechanism by which somebody can remotely disable and brick a device, we don't want that to become a target for malware.
Kevin Mahaffey is the co-founder of Lookout.
So all of a sudden, if there are a way that you can cause millions of devices to all of a sudden become inoperable, that can be a huge amount of money if somebody attacks that system.
Mahaffey's company, Lookout, is working with law enforcement groups to find a safe way to build a kill switch on smartphones. And this week, Apple introduced a feature on iPhones that would render them inoperable if thieves try to turn off tracking programs without using a password. That feature won't roll out until this fall, but Schneiderman called it a step in the right direction. Steve Henn, NPR News, Silicon Valley.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Subaru of Champaign County, featuring the Subaru Impreza, with standard all-wheel drive and an EPA highway rating of 36 mpg, depending on conditions. More information is available at SubaruofChampaign.com or at their location on Route 45 in Savoy.
It's about halfway through the year, and NPR Music already has many favorites. From Justin Timberlake,
as long as I got my suit and tie, I won't leave it out on the floor tonight.
To a Latvian choir. 2013's best music so far, today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on AM 580 and from 5 to 7 on FM 90.9.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, June 13th, 2013. It's the birthday of writer and teacher Mark Van Doren, born in Hope, Illinois in 1894, a poet and a critic who won a Pulitzer Prize for poetry, but perhaps best known as professor of literature at Columbia University, where he taught many students who would go on to become important American writers. It's also the birthday of poet and playwright William Butler Yeats, born in Dublin, Ireland, 1865. He lived during great political and social changes in his home country, but he spent much of his life obsessed not with politics but with mysticism. When he was 20, he and a group of friends formed the Dublin Hermetic Society in order to conduct experiments into the nature of ghosts and psychic powers. He got involved in the London Theosophical Society, also joined the Order of the Golden Dawn, a group that performed a variety of ancient magic rituals. Seeing the performances of mediums and learning about reincarnation inspired him to study Celtic myths and folklore. In 1889, he met Maud Gunn, a beautiful actress and an activist who spoke out for Irish independence. She became the love of his life, and though she refused his many proposals of marriage, she believed that they were spiritually married, that they could communicate telepathically, and that they had been brother and sister even in a past life. Maud Gunn helped Yeats gather folklore from the peasants and to learn about ancient Celtic culture. Yeats came to believe that if he could get in touch with the deep mythic history of the Irish people, he could pull the country together with the power of poetry. He spent many years writing plays about Irish nationalism for Maud Gunn to star in, but by 1910 she had married someone else, and Yeats had given up on trying to win her love. He said, "We make out of the quarrel with others rhetoric, but of the quarrel with ourselves poetry." And here's a poem by Edward Field, Hydra. "This island, whose name means water, never had gods and temples as other Greek islands had. It never was the home of monsters with ferocious heads, and maybe it wasn't even there. But a few centuries ago, as though it had just risen from the sea, men saw stones and pine trees on the slopes, and with the stones made houses, and with the trees made ships. And as naturally as fish swim, the ships went sailing. And as naturally as the sun rises, the boys grew into heroes and sailed to war. But the heroes were foolhardy, as heroes are. So although they were brave and did amazing things, the ships were sunk at last, and the handsome heroes lay on the ocean floor. War's over, fame won, the island settled down, but with the trees all gone, the soil blew away to sea, the houses began to crumble, and the island bleached in the sun to anonymity. The name means water, but now even the wells are drying, and no one expects the rock to grow trees again, while the waters push gently on its shores, waiting for the island to sink quietly back in the sea. Hydra by Edward Field from After the Fall, published by the University of Pittsburgh Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or